Chapter 32. The dark to rust, until he poured it out for her. Ever since that memorable time, though he had, until the night of his arrival, as completely dismissed her from any association with his present or future, as if she had been dead, which he might easily have been for anything he knew, he had kept the old fancy of the past unchanged, in its old sacred place. And now, after all, the last of the patriarchs coolly walked into the parlor, saying in effect, "Be good enough to throw it down and dance upon it. This is Flora." Apostrophe, Flora, always tall, had grown to be very broad too, and short of breath. But that was not much. Flora, whom he had left a lily, had become a peony. But that was not much. Flora, who had seemed enchanting in all she said and thought, was diffuse and silly. That was much. Flora, who had been spoiled and artless long ago, was determined to be spoiled and artless now. That was a fatal blow. "This is Flora. I am sure," apostrophe giggled Flora, tossing her head with a caricature of her girlish manner, such as a mummer might have presented at her own funeral, if she had lived and died in classical antiquity, "I am ashamed to see Mr. Clennam. I am a mere fright. I know he'll find me fearfully changed. I am actually an old woman. It's shocking to be found out. It's really shocking." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he assured her that she was just what he had expected, and that time had not stood still with himself. "Oh, but with a gentleman it's so different, and really you look so amazingly well, that you have no right to say anything of the kind, while, as to me, you know, oh." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Flora with a little scream, "I am dreadful." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the patriarch, apparently not yet understanding his own part in the drama under representation, glowed with vacant serenity. "But if we talk of not having changed," apostrophe said Flora, who, whatever she said, never once came to a full stop, "look at Papa. Is not Papa precisely what he was when you went away? Isn't it cruel and unnatural of Papa to be such a reproach to his own child? If we go on in this way much longer, people who don't know us will begin to suppose that I am Papa's mama." Apostrophe, apostrophe, that must be a long time hence, Arthur considered. "Oh, Mr. Clennam, you insincerest of creatures," apostrophe said Flora, "I perceive already you have not lost your old way of paying compliments, your old way when you used to pretend to be so sentimentally struck. You know, at least I don't mean that. I don't know what I mean." Apostrophe, apostrophe, here Flora tittered confusedly, and gave him one of her old glances. The patriarch, as if he now began to perceive that his part in the piece was to get off the stage as soon as might be, rose, and went to the door by which Pancks had worked out, hailing that tug by name. He received an answer from some little dock beyond, and was towed out of sight directly. "You mustn't think of going yet," apostrophe said Flora. Arthur had looked at his hat, being in a ludicrous dismay, and not knowing what to do. "You could never be so unkind as to think of going, Arthur. I mean Mr. Arthur, or I suppose Mr. Clennam would be far more proper, but I am sure I don't know what I am saying without a word about the dear old days gone forever. When I come to think of it, I dare say it would be much better not to speak of them, and it's highly probable that you have some much more agreeable engagement, and pray let me be the last person in the world to interfere with it, though there was a time. But I am running into nonsense again." Apostrophe, was it possible that Flora could have been such a chatterer in the days she referred to? Could there have been anything like her present disjointed volubility in the fascinations that had captivated him? "Indeed, I have little doubt," apostrophe said Flora, running on with astonishing speed, and pointing her conversation with nothing but commas, and very few of them, "that you are married to some Chinese lady, being in China so long, and being in business and naturally desirous to settle and extend your connection. Nothing was more likely than that you should propose to a Chinese lady, and nothing was more natural, I am sure, than that the Chinese lady should accept you, and think herself very well off too. I only hope she's not a pagodian dissenter." Apostrophe, I am not, apostrophe returned Arthur, smiling in spite of himself, married to any lady, Flora. Apostrophe, oh good gracious me, I hope you never kept yourself a bachelor so long on my account. Apostrophe, apostrophe, tittered Flora, but of course you never did, why should you? Pray don't answer, I don't know where I'm running to, oh do tell me something about the Chinese ladies, whether their eyes are really so long, and narrow, always putting me in mind of mother of pearl fish at cards, and do they really wear tails down their back and plaited too, or is it only the men, and when they pull their hair so very tight off their foreheads, don't they hurt themselves? And why do they stick little bells all over their bridges and temples and hats and things, or don't they really do it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Flora gave him another of her old glances. Instantly she went on again, as if he had spoken in reply for some time. Then it's all true, and they really do. Good gracious, Arthur. Pray excuse me, old habit, Mr. Clennam, far more proper, what a country to live in for so long a time, and with so many lanterns and umbrellas too, how very dark, and wet the climate ought to be, and no doubt actually is, and the sums of money, that must be made by those two trades where everybody carries them, and hangs them everywhere, the little shoes too, and the feet screwed back in infancy is quite surprising, what a traveler you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in his ridiculous distress, Clennam received another of the old glances without in the least knowing what to do with it. Dear, dear, apostrophe, said Flora, only to think of the changes at home, Arthur cannot overcome it, and seems so natural, Mr. Clennam far more proper since you became familiar with the Chinese customs, and language which I am persuaded you speak like a native, if not better, for you were always quick, and clever though immensely difficult no doubt, I am sure the tea chests alone would kill me if I tried. Such changes, Arthur, I am doing it again, seems so natural, most improper, as no one could have believed. Who could have ever imagined Mrs. Finching, when I can't imagine it myself? Apostrophe, apostrophe, is that your married name? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Arthur, struck, in the midst of all this, by a certain warmth of heart that expressed itself in her tone when she referred, however oddly, to the youthful relation in which they had stood to one another. Finching? Apostrophe, Finching, oh yes, isn't it a dreadful name, but as Mr. F. said, when he proposed to me, which he did 7 times, and handsomely consented, I must say, to be what he used to call on liking 12 months, after all, he wasn't answerable for it, and couldn't help it, could he, excellent man, not at all like you, but excellent man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Flora had at last talked herself out of breath for one moment, for she recovered breath in the act of raising a minute corner of her pocket handkerchief to her eye, as a tribute to the ghost of the departed Mr. F., and began again. No one could dispute, Arthur, Mr. Clennam, that it's quite right you should be formally friendly to me under the altered circumstances, and indeed you couldn't be anything else, at least I suppose not you ought to know, but I can't help recalling that there was a time when things were very different. Apostrophe, my dear Mrs. Finching, apostrophe, Arthur began, struck by the good tone again. Oh, not that nasty ugly name, say Flora. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Flora. I assure you, Flora, I am happy in seeing you once more, and in finding that, like me, you have not forgotten the old foolish dreams, when we saw all before us in the light of our youth and hope. Apostrophe, you don't seem so, apostrophe, pouted Flora, you take it very coolly, but however, I know you are disappointed in me, I suppose the Chinese ladies' mandarinesses, if you call them so, are the cause, or perhaps I am the cause myself, it's just as likely. Apostrophe, no, no, apostrophe, Clennam entreated, don't say that. Apostrophe, oh I must, you know, apostrophe, said Flora, in a positive tone, what nonsense not to, I know I am not what you expected, I know that very well. Apostrophe, in the midst of her rapidity, she had found that out with the quick perception of a cleverer woman. The inconsistent and profoundly unreasonable way in which she instantly went on, nevertheless, to interweave their long-abandoned boy and girl relations with their present interview, made Clennam feel as if he were lightheaded. One remark, apostrophe set Flora, giving their conversation, without the slightest notice, and to the great terror of Clennam, the tone of a love quarrel, I wish to make, one explanation I wish to offer, when your mama came and made a scene of it with my papa, and when I was called down into the little breakfast room, where they were looking at one another with your mama's parasol between them seated on two chairs like mad bulls, what was I to do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my dear Mrs. Finching, apostrophe urged Clennam all, so long ago, and so long concluded, is it worth, while seriously to apostrophe, I can't Arthur, apostrophe returned Flora, be denounced as heartless by the whole society of China without setting myself, right when I have the opportunity of doing so, and you must be very well aware, that there was Paul and Virginia which had to be returned, and which was returned without note or comment, not that I mean to say you could have written to me watched as I was, but, if it had only come back with a red wafer on the cover I should have known, that it meant, come to Pekin Nankin. And what's the third place, barefoot? Apostrophe, my dear Mrs. Finching, you were not to blame, and I never blamed you. We were both too young, too dependent and helpless, to do anything but accept our separation. Pray think how long ago, apostrophe gently remonstrated Arthur. One more remark, apostrophe proceeded Flora with unslackened volubility, I wish to make, one more explanation I wish to offer, for 5 days I had a cold in the head from crying which I passed entirely in the back drawing room. There is the back drawing room still on the first floor, and still at the back of the house. To confirm my words, when that dreary period had passed a lull succeeded years rolled on, and Mr. F. became acquainted with us at a mutual friend's, he was all attention. He called next day. He soon began to call 3 evenings a week, and to send in little things for supper. It was not love on Mr. F.'s part, it was adoration. Mr. F. proposed with the full approval of Papa, and what could I do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing whatever, apostrophe said Arthur, with the cheerfulest readiness, but what you did. Let an old friend assure you of his full conviction, that you did quite right. Apostrophe, one last remark, apostrophe proceeded Flora, rejecting commonplace life with a wave of her hand. I wish to make, one last explanation I wish to offer, there was a time ere Mr. F. first paid attentions incapable of being mistaken, but that is past, and was not to be. Dear Mr. Clennam, you no longer wear a golden chain, you are free, I trust you may be happy. Here is Papa who is always tiresome, and putting in his nose everywhere, where he is not wanted. Apostrophe, with these words, and with a hasty gesture fraught with timid caution, such a gesture had Clennam's eyes been familiar with in the old time. Poor Flora left herself at 18 years of age, a long, long way behind again, and came to a full stop at last. Or rather, she left about half of herself at 18 years of age behind, and grafted the rest onto the relict of the late Mr. F. semicolon, thus making a moral mermaid of herself, which her once boy lover contemplated with feelings, wherein his sense of the sorrowful, and his sense of the comical were curiously blended. For example, as if there were a secret understanding between herself and Clennam of the most thrilling nature, as if the first of a train of post-chaises and four, extending all the way to Scotland, were at that moment round the corner, and as if she couldn't and wouldn't have walked into the parish church with him, under the shade of the family umbrella, with the patriarchal blessing on her head, and the perfect concurrence of all mankind. Flora comforted her soul with agonies of mysterious signaling, expressing dread of discovery. With the sensation of becoming more and more light-headed every minute, Clennam saw the relict of the late Mr. F. enjoying herself in the most wonderful manner, by putting herself and him in their old places, and going through all the old performances now, when the stage was moldy, when the scenery was faded, when the youthful actors were dead, when the orchestra was empty, when the lights were out. And still, through all this grotesque revival of what he remembered as having once been prettily natural to her, he could not but feel that it revived at sight of him, and that there was a tender memory in it. The patriarch insisted on his staying to dinner, and Flora signaled yes. Clennam so wished he could have done more than stay to dinner, so heartily wished he could have found the Flora that had been, or that never had been, that he thought the least atonement he could make for the disappointment he almost felt ashamed of, was to give himself up to the family desire. Therefore, he stayed to dinner. Panks dined with them. Panks steamed out of his little dock at 6:15, and bore straight down for the patriarch, who happened to be then driving, in an inn manner, through a stagnant account of Bleeding Heart Yard. Panks instantly made fast to him, and hauled him out. Bleeding Heart Yard? Said Panks, with a puff and a snort. It's a troublesome property. Don't pay you badly, but rents are very hard to get there. You have more trouble with that one place than with all the places belonging to you. Just as the big ship in tow gets the credit, with most spectators, of being the powerful object, so the patriarch usually seemed to have said himself, whatever Panks said for him. Indeed? Returned Clennam, upon whom this impression was so efficiently made by a mere gleam of the polished head, that he spoke the ship instead of the tug. The people are so poor there? You can't say, you know, snorted Panks, taking one of his dirty hands out of his rusty iron-gray pockets to bite his nails, if he could find any, and turning his beads of eyes upon his employer, whether they're poor or not. They say they are, but they all say that. When a man says he's rich, you're generally sure he isn't. Besides, if they are poor, you can't help it. You'd be poor yourself, if you didn't get your rents. True enough, said Arthur. You're not going to keep open house for all the poor of London, pursued Panks. You're not going to lodge 'em for nothing. You're not going to open your gates wide, and let 'em come free. Not if you know it, you ain't. Mr. Casby shook his head, in placid and benignant generality. If a man takes a room of you at half a crown a week, and when the week comes round hasn't got the half crown, you say to that man, why have you got the room, then? If you haven't got the one thing, why have you got the other? What have you been and done with your money? What do you mean by it? What are you up to? That's what you say to a man of that sort, and if you didn't say it, more shame. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.